The nation's unemployment rate held steady at 8.3%. Welcome to Delmarva Today. This is Don Rush. In addition, this week, the president unveiled a series of new initiatives on the foreclosure front aimed at helping federal borrowers and homeowners. Also, there's a continuing national debate over government spending, taxes, the role of federal, state, and local governments in this current recession. To help us sort all of this out for Delmarva, our guests in studio are Memo Dereker, head of the Business Economic and Community Outreach Network. He'll be looking particularly at the trends on the shore. Also, Dick Van Gelder, vice president of Hebron Savings Bank, and Ernie Colburn, who's president of the Salisbury Area Chamber of Commerce. So welcome to you all. Well, first of all, I wanted to get your reaction to the fact that apparently the unemployment rate did hold steady. We had about 227,000 jobs that came up that actually increased. And we have about, I guess, over the last 6 months, we're looking now at about 1.2 million jobs that were created during this half of the year. What's your reaction to all of this? Dick, I'm going to start with you. You're the banker here. What do you make of these new figures?
It's about 3 years too late to get started. Recessions are normally an 18 to 24 month cycle. And officially, I think we're in probably the third or fourth year of this cycle. So it's nice to see the job creation. It's a normal part of the economy. The expansion and contraction. So it's welcome numbers on a national level, not necessarily indicative of things that are happening locally, although the trends are good everywhere, but it's nice to see.
And Ernie Colburn with the Area Chamber of Commerce here, what's your reaction? That good news for you guys, you think?
Well, again, it's a good thing, as Dick says, from a national perspective, but from a local perspective, there's a lot of work to do. We're just really just breaking the ground in the things that we really, really need to do in order to move that that number. And it's maintained at the unemployment rate about 8.6, something like that, over the last, 6 months almost, in Wicomico County, seasonally adjusted as well. So, you know, there's work to do, but, you know, there's hopefully light at the end of the tunnel.
And Memo, what do you think of what's your reaction?
I agree with my colleagues. The leading indicators are positive. We see movement, but on the shore, as well as partly in the rest of the country, but definitely on the shore, the big number we're looking at is the individuals who took themselves out of the workforce, who are no longer counted as unemployed because they're not looking for jobs. When and if these people are going to come back is what we're looking at. And if they do come back, whether they will be come back at a compensation level that was similar to what they left behind. So that's a statistic that we don't normally report, but as part of tracking trends on the shore, we at Beacon are very closely tracking.
Yeah, I know, as a matter of fact, some have suggested that they weren't surprised, for instance, that the unemployment rate might very well hold steady, might even inch up a little because as the economy improves, more people begin to get back into the workforce. Memo, I want to start with you a bit in the sense of what do you see? We were talking a little bit about here just a moment ago that the Delmarva Peninsula still kind of lags behind. I think Van over here suggested about an 8.6, something like that, in Wicomico County. What's sticky here in terms of the recession and Delmarva?
Well, historically, when you look at various economic cycles, we have always entered recessions later than the nation. Our isolation and insulation was a factor in us not getting affected as much as the rest of the nation. So we would go down, but not as hard as the rest of the nation, later than the nation. Also, we would come back a little bit slower and a little bit later than the nation. This past recession, however, we went down fast exactly at the same time as the rest of the nation. That was the first time it was happening, partly because of the construction and real estate industries, because that one doesn't recognize jurisdictional boundaries. But on the recovery, we're reverting back to norm. We're recovering slower than the nation. So it's interesting. The bad side, speed it up the way we go down, but we haven't figured out how to speed up the recovery. So it's going to take us a little bit longer than the rest of the nation. But again, when you look at the leading indicators, intentions of businesses, how much cash they're sitting on, what they have invested in so far, what they plan to invest in, all those are positive. However, we have to also admit that everybody's in a wait-and-see mode. And particularly what they're waiting to see is really two things: what's happening overseas, particularly with the European debt issues, sovereign debt issues, and here domestically, the election.
Jake, I want to turn to you because particularly on the housing front, where do you see us being at this point in time on the peninsula in terms of housing? I mean, I remember when, as a matter of fact, when I first got here, there were massive developments that were in the planning stages. I mean, talking about 1,600 units, which translated into something like 3,200 people or so. Where are we now in terms of the housing market?
Well, we are, interestingly enough, Bill McCain, who's a local appraiser, did a presentation about 3 or 4 weeks ago. We are absorbing inventory, which is a good thing. Prices are stabilizing. They're no longer steeply declining. So we are in a transition mode in terms of the housing market on the shore. But I would urge caution that returning to the norm for our economic condition is being redefined. I don't know that the norm is the expansive cycle of 2004, 5, and 6. I think the norm is a more gentle-paced cycle going back to the 90s and early 2000s. So people on the shore, in terms of looking for jobs, there aren't going to be the craziness of the 4, 5, and 6 cycle where you can do anything and make money at it. It's going to be redefined. Overall, our housing environment is getting better. When you talk to realtors, product is moving. Days on the market is declining. The number of houses across the shore, no matter what county you look at, Wicomico, Worcester, Somerset, even upper shore, mid-shore counties, it doesn't matter. So real estate is improving. We are not going to go back to the developmental days. And as a lender, I'm glad. You know, there is a supply and demand issue. Most of our demand is driven by the fact that we are within 8 hours of 40% of the nation's population. And that is a driving economic force on the Delmarva Peninsula. So that will continue to drive some of it. But I think that the new norm is going to be simply we're better than we were yesterday.
In terms of developers, the folks who, I mean, they're obviously some of them, I don't know whether they lost their shirt, but some of the developments they had planned on just didn't work out and they were not making the kind of money that they thought they would. How are the developers handling this decline and having to absorb some of this cost? I mean, if you don't build, you buy land and then you can't then build on it because the market's not there. And you can drive around Delmarva and you can see these places where the little sign has been up for at least a number of years.
Yeah.
And there's still vacant lots. How are the developers handling this?
Well, that's an interesting point. And I think one of the healthy components of a capitalistic society is this expansion and contraction. The expansion opens opportunities up and the contraction eliminates the weak. And I think in this economic cycle, we have eliminated people that were leveraged, eliminated people that were weak. And as with every economic cycle, those that survive it and come out of that cycle are very well positioned to take advantage of opportunities down the line. Developers have not only, they've lost their shirts, they've lost the closet they put the shirts in. So it's been a very tough cycle for most developers on the shore, without a doubt. And I think some of the bank implications like Wilmington Trust are evidenced as to how terrible it was for the developers on the shore. But there are ones that are surviving. They have gotten through it. They were not heavily leveraged going into it. And they've been able to work through and have cash hold through this. And their equity has got them through it a little bit.
Mima, what kind of, because housing is such a fundamental thing for most people's lives. And a lot of people have obviously lost their homes. What does that do in terms of the kind of dislocation that takes place amongst the population? I mean, Dick on the one hand says that there's this healthy concept of expansion and contraction. The contraction has been really, really dramatic. And it's not only just simply had the impact of, well, somebody's lost their job, but they're going to find a job in 6 months. We're talking about people perhaps haven't found jobs in 2 or 3 years. They may have lost their home. That's a much more dramatic impact. What has that done in terms of the folks on Delmarva?
In the United States, one of our greatest strengths has been our mobility, our economic mobility, as well as our geographic mobility. This situation has actually reduced our geographic mobility because a good number of families are choosing not to put their homes up for sale, the market is not there enough for them to recover what they have put in or what they owe. And by virtue of the fact that they are reducing their geographic mobility, they're de facto also reducing their economic mobility because they're having to say no to certain job opportunities that happen to be elsewhere. Combine that with the reality that lending constraints are making it a little bit more difficult for the younger families to get into their first houses, their first homes. We're seeing a very interesting shift in lifestyle. When you look at the remainder of the 15 industrialized nations, the other 14, there's a much larger proportion of individuals who live in rental or apartments or condos or shared multifamily units. We have not been there, but we are now beginning to look like the rest of the world. There is a generational shift happening. The younger generation is either staying at home with their parents longer than they did compared to prior generations, or when they go out, they're not going out to a single family, they're going out to multifamilies. The time at rental is increasing. The average time at rental used to be 18 to 24 months. Now it's going up to 5 years, 6 years, 7 years. And then when they buy, they're buying the multifamily condos, townhomes, et cetera, which are a little bit easier to finance. So we're seeing something that is making us look like the rest of the developed world. It's an interesting trend.
Well, let's keep on that track for a moment because there's actually some debate. The Republican presidential candidate, Mitt Romney, at one point suggested, I think it was in Nevada, that just simply you allow the market to work its way, that a lot of folks are going to lose their homes, investment folks are going to come in, then they're going to turn around and rent those homes to someone, perhaps maybe even the original occupants, who knows. That's one way of thinking of it, as opposed to some of the certainly the administration efforts to encourage people to try to make it from one point A to point B without being forced to foreclose. So I guess one question is, are all those efforts to keep people at home, to try to transition them from the beginning of the recession to the time they maybe find a job and can then maintain their job, is that the wrong approach? What do you think, Memo, or any of you guys?
I'm a free market person, so I don't like intervention in the market forces. However, there is a difference in this particular market movement in that as Dick was mentioning earlier, there's going to be a new normal, and we might not like what that new normal is going to be. Still, I don't see the interfering as a way to fix it. It's just that we're going to have to become more used to the fact that there's going to be a new normal. Markets are going to do whatever they're going to do, whether we interfere or not. When we interfere, we just simply change the cycle's length. Mm-hmm. That's all. It will still come back to do what it is to. This particular market movement, when the bubble became so big, it was so global in its scope, and it was so big in its magnitude, that it's going to take a lot longer to be able for the markets to be able to recover and come back to what equilibrium is going to look like in the future. Because it was such a big disruption, and because we have to do certain things, we have to get jobs, we have to have homes, etc., the new normal is going to be different than what it used to be.
Dick, what about you? Is at least trying to provide some assistance in a crisis that obviously is far greater than something we've experienced in the past. Is that a bad thing?
You know, there is an old adage that I'm from the government and I'm here to help. And in the economic reality, it, as Memo said, it alters the cycle. It doesn't change the fact that the normal expansion and contraction cycle will happen for fundamental reasons. Two good examples of that are the 90s, when the administration got very involved in saying everybody should have a house. That created lending with negative equity positions. It created no documentation loans of income or ability to prepay or any of that, not in the banking environment because the banks are regulated by the FDIC, but in the mortgage lending markets, it created this very artificial bubble of anybody can own a home if they can sign a piece of paper. And that was an artificial move that fostered some of the boom in expansion. And then most recently, a year or so ago, when the administration announced a rebate of closing costs, there was a flood to buy in the market. which created all this demand. So if you look at chart and market data about supply and demand in houses, it looked like, oh, great, we are coming out of this housing recession. But the fundamentals hadn't changed. So as soon as that program ended, and I think it was last summer or fall of 2011, the market went right back to its normal functioning of trying to absorb the inventory that was out there. So, you know, the government can help with some pain, but they tend to go overboard with regulation and control that interferes with the normal ability of the market to support itself.
So, yeah, go ahead, Ernie.
Just to chime in here on a couple of points. When I was growing up, owning your own home was the goal. Everybody in my generation was interested in home ownership. Now that's really changed. Today's younger folks aren't really so grounded in home ownership. They're more mobile as far as housing is concerned. And getting back to, I think Membo touched on it, and Dick, you touched on it too. I'm not sure Maryland is a real good test market for the norm, simply because of its geographic location to Washington, D.C. If you were to take a huge crane and lift Maryland up and transplant it a four states away, whole different story. There's a residual effect and benefit to being near the nation's capital, and Maryland and the Eastern Shore has benefited from that process. There are people that will sacrifice the drive time to commute to the metropolitan areas to work in Washington, D.C. or some of the aspects of the federal government or the state government, for that matter. So because of that, it has a tendency to tendency to really skew the numbers for us.
We've had an effort. I mean, as you said, point out, and particularly in certainly my father's generation, certainly even in my generation, the idea that to own a home, you know, the FHA, with all these government programs to help us out, was that a mistake? I mean, I'm not talking about the securitization and the rest of it, which led to the crime. But just in general, was it a mistake?
At the time, it was not a mistake. Mm-hmm. It was actually a good thing. But today's economy, in the very globalized economy, when you look at what the remaining 14 of the 15 industrialized nations are doing, tying up so much of your net worth into one asset reduces your options, especially if you cannot easily take that back out. Now, because of the residual effects of the recession, it's a little bit tougher to take that back out and to be able to use it. When you look at our counterparts in other parts of the world, their housing costs are financed primarily through rentals on a periodic basis, and it's a smaller percentage of their income. So they have now a larger chunk of cash to be able to do other things with. And unlike us, they don't use it to spend, they use it to invest or enhance. So it's a different kind of way of looking at what a house is. It's no longer a piggy bank the way it used mm-hmm. to be. A piggy bank works when you can take the money out easily. Here, with the new piggy banks, you have to actually break it, and that's a bad thing.
It sounds like you're making an argument for getting rid of the home deduction for interest. Well, I mean, isn't that what makes homes? Right? I mean, isn't what if you buy a home, and that's one of the things you say, hey, it's going to get me this big
it's
tax
a psychological
deduction.
Factor. Mm-hmm. It's not necessarily an accounting factor. I think you're better off earning the money and paying the tax rather than having the debt and reducing your taxable income by the interest that you pay on that mortgage. So it's a mathematically, it doesn't work out as a benefit.
You're telling me that all of these accountants, all these people who say, hey, you know, get yourself, that's one of the things people recommend. Mm-hmm. Get yourself into a home so that you can, A, have an asset that will hopefully appreciate, and B, that you can also take the tax break off to reduce your income tax.
Well, if let's say you use 28%, you save 28%, but the rest is still your money.
Right. Well, you have to live somewhere, right?
I'd much rather keep more of that mm-hmm. than less of that.
If you're going to pay 28%, if 28% is a marginal tax bracket
right.
today, if you take the interest deduction for home mortgage expense, That simply reduces your taxable income, but it's not a dollar-for-dollar credit. So you're not getting right. back your taxable, the interest that you're spending, you're not getting the full amount back. You're getting back one quarter of that or a portion of that. So mathematically, you are probably better off having a dollar and paying a 28% tax than having a dollar, paying your mortgage, and only being able to deduct the interest portion of that. So in terms of your net worth in the end of the day, one of the driving forces was the appreciation of real estate, which would increase your net worth. So you were investing in real estate that would appreciate, and you would get a tax deduction along the way.
Do you think then that the current bubble has basically destroyed that?
Well, I mean, when you look at any kind of
the idea
tax
that's going to appreciate,
this one included, when you look at any kind of tax incentive, you have to look at the greater good for the nation. There's a reason why the nation says this is good for the 50 states. Let's look at a different model. Let's say that I'm going to provide a tax incentive for you to save for 10 years and build a larger equity and buy a larger portion of a house when you're getting in than having the current interest rate deduction. Nationally, that's a better outcome, because you're encouraging savings, you're increasing, and given that your earlier point A, the housing appreciating, there's going to be a time lag before that ever starts again. So put those two things together, maybe the better thing is to incent the potential buyers to save in home saving accounts, home buying saving accounts, the way the British do, the way the French do, the way most of the industrialized world does. They don't give you a deduction for your mortgage. They give you an incentive for saving, so you go in with 30, 40, 50% when you're buying. It delays your purchase of the house maybe by 6, 7, 8 years, but when you get in, it's more of it is yours.
Well, I want to turn to some of the other sectors of the economy before we run out of time. So I'm going to go to you, Memo. So what do you see in terms of the projection for the Delmarva region in terms of economic growth, aside from construction? What are the other kinds of economic engines do you see, particularly in dealing with what it looks like still continuing to be an expanding population growth? I think we're going to hit 100,000. We haven't already in Wicomico County.
I represent part of the next economic growth, the gray hair, and the fact that I'm not from here, because the next big trend is the pickup of the 50-plus individuals coming to the shore with higher net worth, higher educational attainment, higher disposable income, and higher spending potential. We were beginning to see this before the recession hit. It slowed down a little bit, but all the projections now is from the metro areas, people coming to the shore for the better lifestyle, for the cheaper prices now of housing because of the recession, and because we have certain amenities here that we didn't 10, 20 years ago. These individuals are going to come, and they're going to drive the next generation economic growth. For example, already healthcare on the shore is a booming economic engine. Throughout the recession, it continued to be so. Why? Because 50-plus individuals who have the wherewithal, who have the insurance, are coming and demanding services. So the providers are bringing the services for which we used to go to Baltimore, Washington. So that's the kind of gray shore we're looking at as one of the engines. Another engine is the non-native-born individuals coming here and becoming very entrepreneurial. It's amazing to us when we look at who are the entrepreneurs, who are the sustained entrepreneurs. They're not born in this country, particularly on the Delmarva Peninsula. They're Koreans, they're Indians, they're coming here, they're Vietnamese, they're Turkish, they're starting businesses. You look at the pizza places, you look at the hotels, you look at the doctor's offices, and these are individuals who are taking the risk. They're a lot more comfortable with risk, and they find it a little bit more difficult to go the traditional job route, so they employ themselves, and in the process, they create employment. Those two areas have been growth areas for us, and they're going to continue to be growth areas. I believe, as Dick mentioned, the real estate piece is coming back, but it's going to take a long while to get back to, in fact, hopefully it won't get back to where it was, because that was an aberration. But the new growth is going to be people spending money for their health, for their enjoyment, for their entrepreneurial cravings.
Ernie, I want to turn to you. You're with the Area Chamber of Commerce here. What kinds of changes are you seeing in terms of the kinds of businesses that are being developed, and what are the business folks saying in terms of what the outlook now looks like in terms of now that we're seemingly moving, at least inching anyway, a little out of the recession?
Well, to go back to what Memo said a little while ago, we're about an 18 to 24 month laggard on the national movement on the recovery. And that's held pat even through the 70s, 80s, and even through this cycle that we're going through now. But as far as the Salisbury, Wicomico County area is concerned, we have the big boxes, but we're also seeing the specialty shops. That's an opportunity for downtown, and I know we're looking at the revitalization project of downtown. When I drive through downtown Salisbury, I don't see what's there. I see what could be and can be there. Thriving specialty shops, nice restaurants, the waterfront developed. There's huge, just virtually huge opportunity for improvements and growth in the immediate area. There is a sense of attraction, and going back to the 50-plus demographic profile, those are the more affluent group of people that are coming in to the Salisbury and Wicomico County area. They're higher education, and they've worked through the years and positioned themselves to where they realize that this area has all the amenities that they were able to get in the close to metro areas across the Bay Bridge or up north, what have you. So there is that attraction to come into this area. So there's a lot of positive movement. And I just think that at this point, we really need to concentrate on making sure that we build the core. There is the medical growth aspect of it. But there are a lot of other ancillary businesses that can benefit from the infusion of the population that we have in the area.
Well, what does this mean, do you think, in terms of, you know, traditionally poultry particular, but farming in general has been like the mainstay. I mean, that's been like the real economic engine. You know, as a matter of fact, ironically, even in the state of California, the big state of California, agriculture was the second major industry. So agriculture really has played a major role. Does this shifting to a new kind of people coming to the shore, and obviously that means a new shifting in terms of the kinds of businesses we have. What does that do in relationship to poultry? I know we're having lots of discussions in the state level.
Consolidation is the name of the game. Throughout agriculture, not just poultry, and throughout the United States, not just here, you see fewer people doing more in agriculture. So the number of people involved in our poultry industry, the number of people involved in our agricultural endeavors is shrinking. They also are getting older. But that doesn't necessarily mean that the industry itself in economic value is shrinking. The economic value is, even with the recession holding steady, they are suffering through certain things, commodity prices, et cetera. But what it does in terms of the people coming here, you're going to have more people doing more innovative things, different things than the traditional agriculture. Agriculture is going to become more mechanized, more consolidated, but it's still going to be there because when you look at up and down the eastern seaboard, there's not that much land where you can do agriculture, yet you still need to feed the population. So I believe I'm a strong supporter of agriculture. I'm a strong supporter of poultry. I think it's going to be here. It's going to just change its profile.
As far as agriculture, and particularly with poultry, the Salisbury Area Chamber of Commerce has established a task force on the poultry industry. We had a poultry summit back in December. And we virtually said that, the industry is on life support. We need to turn it around. It's a mainstay. It's $250 million in our economic environment on an annual basis. It's really critical to us. And we have commissioned a nonpartisan agriculture poultry industry environmental impact study that will be available in the next 6 to 8 weeks. And our purpose there in getting a nonpartisan is to make sure that we take these renegade reports that are out and about off the table and get some grounded, solid information about our industry.
Okay, I'm going to have to stop you there. We've been talking to Memo Dereker. He's head of the Business Economic and Community Outreach Network here on the campus of Salisbury University. Also, Dick Van Gelder, Vice President of Hebron Savings Bank, and also Ernie Colburn, the outgoing President of the Salisbury Area Chamber of Commerce. I appreciate all of you guys stopping in and chatting with us. You've been listening to Delmarva Today. I'm Don Rush, and thanks for listening.
This has been Delmarva Today, a production of Delmarva Public Radio. Chris Rank produces and is our audio engineer. Our volunteer producers are Penny Hartman, Kathleen Grout, and Jim White. Don Rush is your host. For podcasts, visit our website, delmarvapublicradio.net, or subscribe to the Delmarva Today podcast in iTunes. Delmarva Today can now be seen on PAC 14. To view the schedule, visit the Daily Times or visit pac14.org.